This is Jody Stone interviewing William Joseph Bradley on July 29, 1987, at his home on Fish Street in Millerton, New York. He was born May 18, 1899. Where, Bill?
White Plains, New York.
What brought you up here?
My father owned the farm, his family owned the farm, and he bought off the brothers and sisters, the other people who inherited, you know. He took over the farm, he came up here, he thought he'd like to go farmer, so he came up here. I believe he worked on the railroad for some time, because he was in Poughkeepsie for a while, and he moved over to White Plains. That's where I was born, and when I was 13 months old, we moved up here to the Lakeville, up to the farm, Lakeville. And we lived there for 20-some years, I think 1921 or 22, I think, is when he sold the farm to John Robert Taylor. And they owned it for some time, and they eventually sold it, and it's been sold again. The present owners are Gawky and Hoffman, and they've done some extensive remodeling on the old homestead.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
Beg pardon?
Do you have brothers and sisters?
My brothers and sisters, yes, I have. I had a brother. I'm the only survivor of the Bradley family. I had a brother, Orville Bradley. He was named for my grandfather, Orville Gridley Bradley. But he was Orville Pierce Bradley. And my mother's maiden name was Pierce. And I had two sisters, married twin brothers. Ethel and Mary Bradley, married Bill and Frank Chase. They had, Mary had three children, and Ethel had one child who was still alive and living in Florida. One of her, my sister Mary's daughters, my only niece, is in Tivoli, New York, and her family lives there. Gordon's family, he's the one in Florida. He has two sons, one in Hartford and one in Florida.
Who are your children?
Who are my children?
Mm-hmm. What are their names?
My oldest son is named Travis Pierce Bradley. He lives in Southampton, Long Island. He is retired from the New York Conservation Department. And he is married, his second wife. And he had two boys and a girl by his first wife. He had no children by his second wife. She had three children. My next oldest daughter, Joan, is married to William Riley, the third, of Sharon. And she works, she's an RN, and she works at State Hospital in Westlake, New York. My next oldest daughter, Janet, just lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. She was married, she just lost her husband recently. She was married and she had three daughters and a son. She had four children. My next oldest daughter is, no, my next oldest would be my son, Roger. Roger Bradley, he's married and lives in here in Norton. He's employed by Northwestern Van Lines, Arnoff Moving and Storage. Then I have a daughter, Elizabeth, who lives in Houston, Texas. She had five children, she had four daughters and a son. Only two of them married. And that's her is Marcia, and his daughter Marcia. She lives in Las Vegas. She just lost her husband. She had one daughter. And I have another daughter, Sandra, is married and living in Manchester, Connecticut. She had five children, I believe.
Boy, that's a big family.
Then my youngest daughter, a baby, is married to John Walters. And she lives in Sharon, Connecticut. She's working at the Sharon Hospital. And they just built a new home in Sharon. They're very happy to have two children, a son and a daughter, both married. And as far as my family goes, we stopped right there.
That's enough.
I guess so.
When you were a boy here, where'd you go to school?
I went to school in Lakeville. I went to Lakeville School. I was in the first grade to the end of the new high school where the post office is now. When that was built, the year I went to school, that would have been 1905. Mm-hmm. That's when I started school. I was 6 years old. And the new school had just been finished. A former school was where the Masonic Lodge is now, the academy there, called the Academy. And right across from that, right directly across the driveway there, was the convent, Catholic convent and school was there.
Who was in school with you? Do you remember?
Who was in school with me?
Who was in your class?
Oh, quite a few in that class. I have a picture of it.
Can you remember any names?
Oh, yes, I remember quite a few names. Kind of boys, they held Harold Evers and Philip Evers, and Philip Evers and I are the same age day to day. They're born in the same year and the same day. And of course, these are the Evers families and the family tree related, so cousins. Let's see, Harold Evers. Harold Hubbard, Leslie Dufour, Catherine, I think it was Catherine Silvernail, there's Gladys Osborne, and oh my goodness, I can't remember them all.
Do you remember who your teacher was?
Yeah, Bessie Argo was one of my teachers, and
she's related to the Paul Argo?
Yes, she's Paul Argo's aunt.
Okay.
She's married to the minister, Dan, Reverend Dan.
Is that Eleanor Dan, anything to Eleanor Dan?
Who?
Eleanor Dan.
Oh, Eleanor Dan. I don't know. I know, what's her name? Plays the organ in Methodist Church. She just gave her a...
Yeah, she just retired.
Yeah.
I can't remember her first name.
Evelyn.
That's
Dan.
Right.
Yeah, she's her father.
Now tell me about your family going back. I understand the Bradleys have been around here for forever. And related to the Everetts, that's Joe Everett's family too?
Yeah, Joe Everett's family comes in there, yes.
Who were your parents?
My parents were William Bradley, William P. Bradley, who owned a farm there.
Mm-hmm. And your mother?
And my mother was Elizabeth Pierce Bradley.
And they were born here?
My father.
You said your father came up.
My father was, yes. Mm. My father was, but his whole entire family was born here.
How far back can you go? Great grandparents.
My great grandparents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know them, of course.
No.
But
they were farmers. Your great grandparents.
Oh yeah, they owned all that property that, along with the Eric family. My great-grandfather. And my grandfather, my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather married an Everett. And that's how I got in the Everett, mm-hmm. Everett Bradley Everett. And before that, I don't remember.
Now, you keep saying all that land. What land? Where is it?
It encompasses the entire Elgo area, Ore Hill area, and up to as far as Mount Rigg, up to as far as the lakes. Over 1,000 acres, and it covers all the property between the two roads, Belco Road and 44, to Ore Hill. And as you go to Ore Hill on the right hand side, you know where Ormine Road is?
Mm-hmm.
There's a yellow house on the right hand side, and there's another one just across the intersection there. They're both Everett's homes.
Oh.
And They owned all that property up there. They owned all the mining rights and everything else. That was a land grant from the King of England.
To whom? Your great grand?
To one of the Everetts, I believe. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I don't think it was a Bradley, because Bradley's married into the
Everetts family. Into the Everetts family.
That's how they came in there, yeah. My first Bradley that came over here in 1600 and something. There were two brothers, Mason and James Bradley, came over from England. And they were supposed to have landed at New Haven. Instead, they landed at New London. And they walked the entire distance from New London to New Haven across the state of Connecticut. And Nathan Bradley is credited with discovering the source of the Amonasset River?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Amonasset River, yeah, right. And at the head of the Amonasset River, there's a pond, like, I don't know how large it is, but it's still on the map. It's called Nathan's Pond. It's named for Nathan Bradley. He was supposed to have been a great bear hunter. And he killed with many bear, according to genealogy stuff there. You'd have to read it, you know, I couldn't tell you all. Oh, it's on there, about him. And that house, the old homestead, well, they finally settled in Guilford, Connecticut. That's where Bradley settled in this country, when he came to this country. And the old homestead up there was built in 1722.
The one up on Belco.
Yeah, or Gawky Hoffman. Do you know where that is?
Mm-hmm. It's at the corner of Belgo and what? Reservoir Road.
But it's this side.
But it's this side of Reservoir Road.
Yeah, it's on the left-hand side. The big house. It just remodeled the whole thing. Restarted. A little pond across the road. Well, that pond across the road is drying up. It has been for some time. Well, there's not much of the water coming in there. There's a spring on the property near Homestead that in the well, as long as the Bradley alive, that spring belongs to the Bradley family. It can't be touched, it can't be converted or diverted, the water diverted or anything. But anybody who owns that house has the rights to that water. Well, what happened to that spring? Somebody bought the lot that the spring is in. And I guess they thought they owned the spring. They dug a big hole right near it and they just swept with water. They hit the vein, apparently, and it filled up the hole in the ground, and the spring is practically dried up now. I don't know if there's anything to be done about it. So Gawky and Hoffman, they had their water tested. They said it was a contamination there, so they drilled a well. Now they have good water there. There's a lot of good water up on that hill. What else can I tell you about?
Well, you were telling me about a bird sanctuary.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is just above the old homestead there. It's on the right-hand side, and there's a triangular piece in there. And it goes back to about between 5 and 8 acres. I'm not sure exactly how much there is there. And that belonged to William B. Reed. And he was a member of the Bradley family because his father was a Bradley, apparently, because his middle name was Bradley, William Bradley Reed. And he lived where, going to Indian Mountain School, Elite 44,
mm-hmm.
A big house, a big place on the left-hand side there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who lives there now. Wagner lived there at one time, and then he sold it to...
Peter Gott lives there.
Peter Gott lives there
Peter
now?
Peter Gott, if you mean right at the corner of Indian Mountain and 44.
Yeah.
Well, it's Tom Wagner's house.
Oh, no, just the next one. Big yellow place on the left-hand side. Beyond that. Just beyond.
Going toward Lakeville?
Just before you go down the hill. I believe Ann Chase lived there, does she?
Yes, she did. Yes, that's right.
She lives that property. Yeah, Dr. Cadman had it at one time.
It was the Cadman house.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, well, that was originally William B. Reed house. And he owned some property up in there. And he declared it a bird sanctuary. I guess he was quite a bird lover. And he fenced it all in, and no trespassing signs there. And yeah, I told you about the gate the other day.
Tell me again.
At a big white board gate. And on each board of the gate, he had letters. And on top one, it said Audubon Park. And it said, the rhyme goes as follows. Don't shoot the birds. The little birds, the pretty birds, the useful birds. And it's signed upon him, W.B. Reed.
That's nice.
I believe that was the only Audubon Park I ever heard of, being in the town of Salisbury. It was a private sanctuary. It wasn't any society or anything like that. I understand they have an Audubon Society in Sharon now, but I don't think there's one in town of Salisbury.
No.
Is that it? You know?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Now, you also mentioned Bradley's Corners.
Well, that's the four corners of Belga Road and Reservoir Road and Ore Mine Road come together.
Mm-hmm.
At the old, I don't know who owns that house right at the foot of the hill now. It belonged to Somerville. Milne built that. That's to Milne. And that was the original Everett's Homestead. The original Everett's Homestead. And I believe he built that house around the old house and used some parts of the old original Everett's house in that new building that he built there, that new home. I've never been in it, I don't know, but I was told that.
Do you mean that big white house?
Yeah, right at the foot of the hill.
Where Dr. Wheeler lived for
where
a while.
Dr. Wheeler lived, that's
okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Right at the foot of the hill. And a man by the name of Somerville, I believe, owned it at one time, too. That was after Dr. Wheeler. I never knew him. I knew him. I never knew him. But that was four corners there. It was always called Bradley Corner. Well, it was Bradley Road all the way from 44 right up to the foot of Belgo Hill. And from there on, that was Belgo. And it was always known as that. How Belgo ever got its name, I don't know. There's many versions of it. I don't remember them. Somebody said that one time that somebody had an old car and they had a bell on, a bell ringer. Where the bell goes is where the cow goes. So that's how they found the cow with the bell. They call it bell. I don't know. Funny stories. Let me see what else.
Can you remember as a child the houses in Lakeville along Main Street?
Who lived
in them?
I remember them, but I remember who lived in them.
Well, let's go down the street. Let's start where, what's there now? The restaurant is there now, the Lakeville Cafe. It used to be the First National and Horace Brickman. A&P and...
A.C. Roberts.
Yes, and going towards Salisbury. Can you remember who lived on that side of the street?
Russ Miller had a plumbing shop. That would be the next house.
That's going towards Salisbury?
Going towards Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
Where Ada Emily Miller lived.
Mm-hmm.
You probably don't know her, or do you?
No.
I think she's in a home. I think she's in Avon somewhere. I think she's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
She is. She's quite a bit older than I. And as far last we heard, somebody, when I could have been to see her, said she was still alive. That's the next place was, that's where the apothecary
mm-hmm.
place is. That belonged to a man by the name of Wentworth. What was his first name? I'm not sure of the first name now, but anyway, he was bookkeeper for A.C. Roberts and Company for years, and that was a nice house. It was a brown clapboard house and had a big iron railing fence all around it, and that was how the kids, school kids, couldn't get in down the driveway or around the yard, I guess. And next to that was the school.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go on down where the, what do you call it, is there a tavern there now?
There used to be the Blue Room.
Yeah, well, that used to be a residence. And there used to be a shoemaker in there. I've forgotten what his name was. Before, who was a shoemaker over there?
Danny, but he died. Danny Lofredo.
Lofredo. Danny Lofredo. And this guy was before Danny Lofredo. I don't remember what his name was. And next to him was, Bill McCullough, and these two sisters lived in that house. I can't recall their names now. And next to that, I believe, was, who lives in there? There are two other houses in there. One, Charlie Miller owned one. Charlie Miller lived in one house and who lived in the other? I don't remember. That's before we come to Methodist Church.
Mm-hmm. Then the church.
Then the church. Then there's Day, Charlie Day's house. He was a gardener.
Mm-hmm.
He had a truck garden. What else he did, I don't know. He had two sons and a daughter, I think. It was their old Henry Day, and I forgot what the girl's name was. There was a girl. It seems to me there was, but I don't remember. And next to that, of course, was Dr. Bissell's house. And then next to Dr. Bissell's, going up the street, the only person that I remember who lived in there, there's the Tuttles, Dr. Tuttle. There was probably somebody in there before he, but I don't remember who it was. Oh, maybe I do too. I think I got something in my genealogy there. Someone of my relatives lived in that house, right there by the brook. Then go on, there's a Chapin house, belonged to Chapin, Dr. Noble's house.
Mm-hmm.
And above that, there's a two-family house. There were several different families lived in that house. That's where Dr. Peterson was. He had his office in there later. And I remember the Bryants lived in there at one time, and someone else. And see, you can look at the house, you can see there's two different apartments there. And next to that, going up the hill, was Peter Everts.
Same family?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Peter P. Everts. And next to him was Ben Jones, owner of the Lakeville Journal. Jill and friend of the Lakeville Journal. The next house up, shut back, this big white house back there, belonged to the Coles family. That's where the Coles lived years ago. Dwight Coles and Sid Coles and Dwight Coles, and they had a sister, Lila, and another sister, Addie, I think her name was. She was some kind of an educator. She tutored kids. She brought up boarding kids, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And they were little. Beyond that was, well, that's another ticket.
Newkirk now.
Newkirk now, but before Newkirk it was Burdick, before Burdick was Arthur Lord, before Arthur Lord, I don't remember who was there then. Before Arthur Lord, I don't think it was an undertaker in Town Salisbury, before Arthur Lord, I don't remember what anyway. I guess we always used the Valentine's funeral home over here. He buried more people in Salisbury than anybody else, I guess.
What brought you to Millerton?
Huh?
Why'd you move to Millerton?
Why did I move to Millerton?
Because you were mayor of Millerton for a while.
I got kicked out of Town of Salisbury.
Why?
Well, it was during the Depression, I tell you. It's a sad, sad story, not a long one. During the Depression, I was always interested in automobiles. I mean, when I was a little kid, anything that was mechanical just thrilled me. So I got in the automobile business, and I worked at that for a while, and I went in business for myself. I worked for Dufour, and I worked for Bill Chase, and I worked, and I went in business for myself right during the Depression. And just before that, I had purchased a house in Lime Rock. Everything went fine for a while, and then all of a sudden, boom, the bottom fell right out and everything. Just like around it, fell out of the stock market. And there was no jobs available, and people didn't have any money. You couldn't make a living working for yourself, and not in the automobile business anyway, because there were too many shops around at that time. So my wife and I moved down to Lime Rock, and we lived there a few years. I worked on WPA and for anything I get to do to make a dollar, you know, keep my family alive. And finally, I couldn't keep up the payments on the home. I bought it over FHA, I guess so, Homeowners Loan Corporation at that time. I couldn't keep up the payments, so I lost the house. I came to Millet. I did. My family was still in Lime Rock when I came to Millet to work. I came over here in 1933 and they came over in 1937, I guess it was. And I got over here and I was working not only in the garage business, I was working several other jobs at the same time. And I got interested in politics. I got acquainted with a very good friend of mine. His name is Hotchkiss, Fred Hotchkiss. I don't know, you probably don't remember the Hotchkiss name. You know,
wasn't their house what used to be the Oakhurst restaurant?
That's the original Hotchkiss home,
yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So the man who made that restaurant, I can't remember his name now, he unearthed piles and piles of Hotchkiss family papers in the old barn there.
Hotchkiss?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the carriage house.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Yes. Get my audio up before I hear what you
said. Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. That was the Hotchkiss house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one Hotchkiss girl lives over in Lakeville now. What's her name? Oh, Squeal.
So he was in politics here?
He was not in politics, no, but he got me interested in politics. As I said, I was working several different jobs, and the job of a tax collector came up. And he was quite influential in the village, and Miller, his whole family was, because he wasn't interested in politics. He was working in the bank at the time. And he asked me, he said, Bill, he said, why don't you try to run for tax collector? He said, it's not a hard job. He said, there's not much to it. He said, it pays about $75 a month. He said, you could use the extra money. I said, why don't you try for it? I said, Fred, I said, you know, I wouldn't have a chance of a snowball. I said, to get elected here. I said, I'm practically a stranger. I haven't been near that long. I said, I don't know. He said, let's just try it and see what we can do. And he said, I think probably we can make it. So I said, well, all right, you think we can do it? All right, I'll try it. So I guess he talked to some of the other influential people in the village and all. And he had to be a Republican to get anywhere over here. The first thing he asked you when you came over here, wherever you went, are you Republican or Democratic? If you were a Democrat, they wouldn't have anything to do with you. You had to be a Republican. So he talked with some of the other influential people, and, you know, the Powers and the Kays and Miners and several others. And I said, okay, we'll give him a chance. That's all I needed, you know. win a caucus and get a vote for yourself and you're nominated. Had it made. But the second time I ran for collector of taxes, I was opposed by another native president of Village Martin. And I beat him. We had the biggest caucus that ever was held in the Village of Millerton.
Who was the
town
person?
Town northeast from it, because that was town tax collector. And where they usually held the caucuses was in the village room, which is in the old, or the town room, which is in the old Brick Block Hotel. Mm-hmm. There's a room not much bigger than my dining room there. And we got so many people, they're all up standing outside, couldn't get in, you know. So, well, look, I guess we have to move somewhere. So we moved across the street in the Odd Fellows Hall, which is a big hall that was able to accommodate the crowd. So I won that nomination.
Who was the man?
Albert Franks.
Okay.
Yeah. And after that, I kind of got out for a year or so. I guess I was out of politics, and then all of a sudden, Bill Gormley, who worked for Dutch Asado at the time, was interested in politics, and he wanted to run for mayor. And I think he's already on the village board, remember the village board. And he asked me if I would like to get on the village board, I could take his seat on the village board, because he wanted to run for mayor. So I said, well, I don't know. So anyway, if my fate finally talked me into it, so I ran for village trustee, and I made that. And as consequently, I had 16 years on the village board, 8 years as, or 4 years as mayor in the village. So that's how I got stuck in politics.
You liked it, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too bad. It was one meeting a month. And, well, of course, you got committees that you had to work on, things you had to. They had the street and highway committee, and they had lighting and water committees, and other committees that you had to take care of. You were appointed, assigned to these things by the mayor, and you had to report to him at different, you know, meetings and so forth. I had to handle complaints, and like dog complaints and cats, and there's a skunk in my yard, what are you going to do about it? And we had one here last night, as a matter of fact. And trivial things, you know, that people complain about.
Yeah.
Yeah, nuisance things, but things you had to take care of. You know.
So you never moved back to Salisbury?
No, I never did.
Hmm.
No, we bought this house, and we have made some extensive improvements here. And the wife likes it here, and she, well, we liked it in Lakeville. Well, I wasn't born there, but I was brought up there, and that's my roots are there, mm-hmm. You know, my whole family. And
now I want to ask you about this sword that you showed me the other day.
Yeah.
Tell me the history of that sword.
The history. Marjorie's going to write that up for you.
Okay, but I'd like it for people that like people to hear you talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. The sword that you see there on the table was belonged to Captain Nathaniel Evers, and it's a relic of the French and Indian War. Now that dates back to 1745, 46, down around in there somewhere. And he got the sword from a French, British or French officer. Now I'm not sure of that either, because I guess it was a British officer that became acquainted, and they wanted something to remember one another by, so they swap swords. And this is a sword that Nathaniel Evers got for the sword that he gave the British, it was a British officer. And that is, there's quite a story with that, it's a history, which I will give you if you want that, if the historical society wants that.
The sword?
Yeah.
I've already talked to him about it.
And that white waistcoat there.
Mm-hmm.
Marjorie's going to write up a story. It's already written up, but my sister wrote it, and that's not very legible. I mean,
where did that vest come from?
The vest came from another Well, that, no, that was Captain Nathaniel Leverage.
His own best?
Yes. Yeah.
He must have been a big man.
He was. He weighed over 300 pounds. Yeah. Yeah. There's some very, very interesting stories in that genealogy.
Now, he was a captain in... during the French and Indian War?
Yeah, and he's also... well, no, there's three Nathaniel Everett's. I'd have to sort them out. Captain Nathaniel Everett Jr., Captain Nathaniel Everett II, and Captain Nathaniel Everett. There's a plaque over in the Methodist Church, in the back of the Methodist Church.
In Mayfield?
Yes. Dedicated to one Nathaniel Everett. Anyway, that's the second or third there. Anyway, that was his waistcoat, yeah. He was a big man. He weighed over 300 pounds, he said.
Do you know where they're all buried?
Yeah, so most of them are buried in Salisbury Cemetery.
The big cemetery.
The big cemetery. Near the road,
mm-hmm.
Toward Great Barrington,
mm-hmm.
on that end,
mm-hmm.
Road toward Cobble Road.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an old cemetery in there, and they're buried in there.
Not behind the town hall?
No, no. There is a William Bradley buried there. I found his grave, but we're not positive about who he was.
Sounds likely, though.
It sounds to me like he may have been, I don't know who his ancestors could be.
Now, about 1,000 acres up there on Belco.
Elk, yeah.
Did they do any mining?
Huh?
Did they do any mining themselves, the Bradleys?
They did in the beginning, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any recollection.
They farmed it.
Yeah, mostly. Lived on the income of what they owed or something like that, I don't know. Farming in those days is just just something where it existed. You raised your own food and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Cut your own firewood and lived off the land. Whether they had anything to do with the forming of Richardson Mining Company, I don't know. I know my father worked in mine, I presume. Maybe his brother or his uncles may have. His father, I don't know what his father did. I don't know what his father did. I have no idea what he did.
Do you remember anything as a child that was really catastrophic or very exciting? Fires, storms, big snowstorms, parades? Anything that sticks in your mind as a big memory as a child?
Oh, I remember. Oh, yeah. Talk about a snowstorm. I guess so. Snowstorms in those days that you don't see them today. We had back in the 50s, I think we had some heavy snow here. Because one time the snow was up to the top of the railing out there.
You mean 1950s? Yeah, I was here then.
Yeah. We had some bad snowstorms then. And in the early 30s, we had some bad snowstorms. So that's when I was living in Lime Rock. And before that, when I was a child, we had some bad snowstorms and club roads, so you had to get out in the morning and shovel and snow. And there were places where the wind would blow the snow off the ground, off the road, and there'd be bare spots, and we'd have to haul snow in to cover the bare spots so we'd make the sledding, you know. And there'd be sometimes we would have to wait for us to get out. Peabody's farm was up on Reservoir Road, up the end of the road there. And sometimes we'd have to wait until Peabody came down. His man came down with the milk and stuff, and a team of horses, and the two families, the two teams of horses, tried to break the road through and shovel. Sometimes they couldn't get through the horses, they had to shovel first. I remember when the snow banks were full of horses' backs.
Would they have V plows or something?
No, not in those days.
No?
No, never had any plows in those days.
Not even pulled by horses?
No. No.
Mm.
No.
So you were often snowed in as a child?
Very, yes. Yeah. Yeah, quite often. Yeah. And I remember sometimes we used to have to, well, my father used to get up. He'd try to be in the barn around 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30. In the wintertime, sometimes you're going to get in there before 6, 7 o'clock. After shovel path all the way to the barn. Sometimes they had a tunnel. There should be so high you'd tunnel through, you know, to get into the barn. And that's my recollection of the snowstorms. They were very bad.
So the weather really has changed.
Oh, yes. Well, when I was a kid, I used to ride my sled on top of the snowbanks, go right over the tops of fences that existed at the time. There isn't no fences now, of course. But fences 4 and 5 feet high, I'd go right over the top of them. And my sled would get crusty on the...
That must have been a hard walk to school.
It was until, well, when once it got a path down, so it got the roads open, it was all right. Wasn't too bad. But it was bad enough. You know, got a snowstorm during the day. Quite a trudge to get home.
Yes, I would think. What did they do with the children, little children, on the storm?
They all got home some way.
The teachers bring you, or your parents come get you?
No, we got home by ourselves.
You were tough kids then.
We were tough kids, yeah. We sure were. I remember when I was very small, when I first started school, my brother would, sometimes the snow would be so deep I couldn't get through it. He put me on his shoulders and carried me. Yeah.
What'd you do for fun when you were a little boy? Where'd you play?
Oh, we did the same thing all kids did in those days. You know, we had to make our own fun, our own trees. We had our swings, we had our tree houses, and climbed trees and got into mischief, stuff like that, which we thought was fun. We used to play down around the mine a lot when we were kids. I remember going down there. We followed the miners when they went in the mine.
Which mine?
Orhill.
Orhill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before I went in the mine, they'd stop in the mining house and get their candles. Every man had so many candles. And they had different places where they would hide their candles along the drifts, what they call the drifts. That was the mine opening and where you went down in the mine. And that was all shored up with slabs and stakes. And they would have a place where they could pull the slabs out and they'd put the candles in there. They knew where they were. So we kind of found them down there and watched where they put the candles, and we'd take the candles. But we had tents in the summertime, and we had used the candles in our tents and things. That was a dirty trick, I know, but I don't think they ever missed them because they always had plenty of candles. And, yeah.
What games did you play as a little boy?
Hmm?
What kind of games did you play?
I guess games if you still play the same games, I guess. Hide and seek, tag, baseball, croquet. Anything you think of.
Did you go swimming a lot?
Yes, we did. Yeah.
At the Grove?
We went to Grove, and that pond right across from Gawky's, I told you about, it was fed by that spring.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That made a nice little swimming hole. But it wasn't very big, so we liked a lot of water, so we would go down to the lake, and do our swimming there. That was several places there we could swim. Willis Jefferson and I were very good friends. As a matter of fact, we were both the same age. There were three of us, three boys, Milton and Thomas Salisbury, were born on the same day. Philip Everett, Willis Jeffers, and myself. Philip Everett, I don't know what happened to him when he got out of school. He moved away somewhere down New Jersey or Long Island, I guess. But Willis Jeffers and I grew up together. And his family, his grandfather, owned the place where what's his name, a lawyer. I know, you know where all the pine trees are going toward, coming toward Millet? You know where Culver used to live?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bill Culver? Mm-hmm. But just beyond that, on the right-hand side, who was the lawyer who lived in there? What was his name?
I can't tell you.
Anyway, that was the old Bissell place. And that was all bare, all open ground all the way from his house all the way down to the lake. There was nothing in there then. The cow pasture, and then the old railroad ran through there.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a beautiful beach there. It's just level and nice, you know, nice sandy and so forth. And we used to go down there, and we used to swim around in there a lot. And we had boats there, and we'd go fishing and so forth. We spent a lot of time fishing. One of the sports we did.
And skating in the winter, probably.
Skating in the winter time. Yeah. I never got into skiing. My friend did. Jeff got into skiing. broke his leg. They had a grape arbor. This hill from the barn down to the road. There's a piece of property kind of like this. And there's a grape arbor. Just about the foot of the grave, you know, where it started going to the grave. And that would fill in with snow in the wintertime, and he'd ski down with us. And he'd jump over that grape arbor. And he jumped one day and broke his leg. And he jumped the gear, went skiing after that.